Hi, this is Leonard Peikoff here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. My responses cover subjects of general interest, such as human relationships, career, and morality, but not current politics. For the present, my answers are posted every other week on Mondays, and Dr. Yaron Brook answers questions on current events on the alternate Mondays. You can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes on my website. Several years of podcasts are now easily searchable by topic or keywords. If you have a philosophical question to ask, simply go to www.peikoff.com, and that's spelled P as in Peter, E-I-K-O-F-F, like the word off at the end, peikoff.com. And of course, feel free to follow me on Facebook and Twitter.
A Picture Is Not an Argument by Dr. Leonard Peikoff.
Good evening and welcome to the Fort Hall Forum. My name is Charles Tsekaris, and I'm a member of the Forum's Board of Directors. Tonight, Dr. Leonard Peikoff joins us for the final program of our fall season to discuss A Picture Is Not an Argument.
Thank you very much, Charles. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You have heard the most important piece of information, which is the website. We live in a world which loves pictures, whether still or moving. Pictures we hear everywhere give us the true, the concrete, the real, as against abstractions, interpretation, theory, all of which is misleading or distracting because it is mere talk. A picture, according to the received wisdom, is worth a thousand words. A picture does not lie, whereas people, especially when emitting clouds of verbiage, notoriously can and do. And I am going to speak throughout tonight only of undoctored, unmorphed, unretouched pictures. In other words, accurate representations of the object involved. Our educators long ago picked up this picture idolatry. Their pride lies in a visual education. Their primary teaching tool, they boast, is no longer reading assignments, but showing movies, whether in a theater or on TV or via computer. Now, pictures may not give us the whole story. The more intelligent of these picturists, as I shall call them, admit, I'll call them other things too. But they go on, pictures almost always make some important contribution to cognition, and they are usually indispensable to reaching the full truth. You see the dichotomy we are offered. On the one side is pictures, which are aligned with truth, education, reality, and on the other side is words, which are aligned with distortion in the form of theory, abstraction, and by implication, philosophy. Picturists, obviously, promote their various causes primarily through the use of pictures. For example, consider the question, is capital punishment valid in regard to a crime such as first-degree murder? Phil Donahue, an inveterate picturist, has long advocated showing a single execution live on TV in order to settle the debate. People, he holds, after they watch the victim's choking, his writhing, his twisting spasms, his bloody convulsions, will grasp directly the evil of capital punishment, and that would stop it once and for all. By contrast, he thinks, professors endlessly debating its pros and cons are irrelevant. Was it right for the U.S. to drop nuclear weapons during World War II? The Smithsonian Institute and many other leftist groups believe that the most telling evidence lies in stills or movies. The ominous mushroom cloud over Hiroshima, the wholesale devastation, the burns and wounds of masses of victims, the genetic freaks of decades later. After all this, the picturists ask, who needs a speech or a book by some foreign policy wonk? Is abortion murder? Does a fetus have rights? Watch the silent scream, the picturists on the religious right advise. See the fetus actually being dismembered and crushed during an abortion. See its little brain being brutally vacuumed out of its head. After that, who needs an abstract discussion of rights? The appeal to pictures as the standard of truth is omnipresent in our society. Should landmines be banned? I quote from Ann Landers, the epitome of a non-extremist. A few months ago, I saw a moving film put together by Physicians Against Landmines, one of these little groups that pop up on an hourly basis. The film showed hundreds of civilians, this is quoting Ms. Landers, the film showed hundreds of civilians who had had limbs blown off by landmines. It convinced me that there should be an international agreement to outlaw these hideous devices, unquote. Are the Los Angeles police brutal thugs? Just watch the home movie of Rodney King being beaten. Do animals have rights? PETA will provide you with eloquent pictures of baby seals being clubbed to death. Should the Democratic Party advocate more legislation in behalf of the disabled? Pan that camera over to Christopher Reeve in his wheelchair during the 1996 convention. Do we face a threat from global warming? Dial up the Sierra Club website and watch the flames consume the earth. Should American troops enter Somalia? Let the TV network show emaciated children dying of hunger. Should American troops leave Somalia? Let the same networks show the naked corpse of an American soldier being dragged through the streets by the natives. We have now reached the point, thanks to picturism, of foreign policy dictated by TV producers. Now, another angrier term I use for these same people is picture mongers. And my answer to the picture mongers of the world, no matter what their cause or ideology, is simple. I say a plague on all of them. Or to use the more polite title of my talk tonight, a title devised by my wife, Amy, a picture is not an argument. I once asked my radio audience to rate the cognitive contribution of pictures in enabling us to resolve a philosophic or political issue. I had listeners vote on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being pictures are useless and 10 being indispensable. My own vote was minus 10. Because I hold that the picturist method of resolving disputes is epistemologically corrupt, that by its nature it is hostile both to knowledge and to reality, and that it makes reaching a true conclusion on a contested subject not easier, but literally impossible. I don't object to pictures used merely as illustrations, after it has been made clear that the pictures have no evidentiary significance. What I object to is pictures used cognitively in an abstract discussion. Or to put it another way, pictures used to try to solve or even help solve a problem in philosophy or politics. A picture used in such a manner, I hold, represents the antithesis of thought, of logic, of rational argument. To understand why, ask yourself what such a picture does to the viewer's mind. Let us work through a real case this evening. I've picked the issue of abortion. The question is abortion morally right or wrong? Is abortion murder because the embryo or fetus is a person with rights? Or is abortion a non-criminal act because it is merely a woman's decision to dispose of a tissue mass growing in her body? Now, supposed to help you decide this question, I eschew talk, a pejorative term, and instead show you the movie, The Silent Screen. What am I counting on as you sit there for something like an hour watching vivid pictures of cute little creatures with many obvious similarities to newborn babies? The fetus has a head, 5 fingers, 5 toes, 2 ears. As you watch these cute baby-like creatures being attacked, torn into pieces, crushed to pulp, what I am counting on and expecting from you clearly is horror, revulsion, a loud no. I am expecting a passionate emotion amounting to the feeling, this is murder, this is evil, this must not be allowed to happen. What am I expecting of your brain, your distinctively human organ of cognition, during this process? Nothing. The movie is designed to bypass the brain. By engaging your focus in an emotionally charged way on the images before your eyes, the movie thereby bypasses all the other knowledge available to you and relevant to the abortion issue, perhaps even essential to its correct resolution. The intense emotion causes you to narrow your focus, to become blind to every other consideration. In epistemological terms, it causes you to drop the context. In other words, the picture seduces you into responding to a concrete example while blithely ignoring all of the surrounding information that would enable you to interpret the picture rationally. The movie makes that information recede, fade into seeming insignificance, and disappear from your mental screen. The movie shows you clearly the similarity, which is real, between the fetus and the newborn baby. But what information, as an example, does the movie not give you? It omits the fact that there is a long, unbroken continuum stretching from the zygote to the embryo to the fetus to the neonate to the child, the teenager, the adult, the shrinking old man twitching on his bed, right on to the corpse, its gradual disintegration if left untended, and then to the final pile of ashes which blows away. If one stops to think about it, everyone, including the advocates and the enemies of abortion alike, knows perfectly well that this continuum exists, and therefore that there are dozens or hundreds of similarities between any two frames of it, including between the fetus and the baby. No advocate or enemy of abortion ever believed that the fetus looked just like a tiny hippopotamus, or like a Mercedes-Benz, say, until the 7th month, when it suddenly transmuted into a tiny man-like creature. So showing a movie of a fetus highly similar to a baby in the process of being crushed and expecting that to justify a loud no from the audience totally evades the question. It evades all questions, including in that continuum from zygote to ashes, At what point does the object acquire rights, and at what point does it lose them? No visual study of the development, no mere staring or glaring at each stage in succession will give you the answers. At no point does a flag emerge or a flare go off to announce, from here on, it is a person, or from here on, it is not. By engaging your emotions and your focus only on the side of the similarities among the stages, the movie neglects the differences. It is therefore unable even to raise such an issue as, where do you draw the lines in defining a person, and how do you know that's where to draw them? At what points in the continuum does the difference outweigh the similarity, so that the thing you are seeing is not yet or no longer a person with rights? Only a man prepared to deal with broad abstractions and basic principles, a man offering and validating definitions of rights, person, and life, can guide us here, which means only a process of philosophic thought, not of watching movies, can give us the answers we need. In actual fact, everyone watching the movie has to decide the issue ultimately, even if implicitly and without admitting it, on the basis of some kind of philosophic principles. How else account for the fact that some of the watchers, believing that the zygote is a person, are horrified to see any medical tampering, as they call it, with it, even at this earlier and, to me, utterly innocuous stage? While at the other extreme, many ancients, such as the Egyptians, believing that the pharaoh's corpse lying in state inside the pyramid is still a person with rights, were equally horrified to see any tampering with the, to me, incontestably dead and gone. The picturist argument, in essence, is, when I see certain images, I feel horror. Therefore, abortion violates rights. This is no argument. It is an utter non sequitur. It is the classic appeal to emotion reviled by every logic text since the time of Aristotle. Now, because abortion is merely an example this evening, I am not going to present my own view of it now, but I'll be happy to in the question period if you ask me.
To hear the rest of this lecture, visit estore.aynrand.org.
If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peekoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most important novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And I might add that it wouldn't hurt you to read my latest book, The Dim Hypothesis.